Good morning. This is Patricia Kohlberg for KBOO Radio and for the Old Mole Variety Hour. Today I have with me Colin Stackhouse and Rebecca Shoon from Healthcare for All, Oregon. Rebecca Shoon is a professor of public health and board member of Healthcare for All, Oregon. She has studied comparative health systems and ways to engage the public in health policy making. Colin Stackhouse is a longtime advocate for universal health care in Oregon. Colin also serves on the Community Engagement and Communications Committee of the State of Oregon's Universal Health Plan Governance Board. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour, Colin Stackhouse and Rebecca Shoon.
Thank you so much for having us. We're delighted to get the chance to talk.
Thank you.
So Oregon's Universal Health Plan Governance Board is currently developing a single-payer plan for Oregon that is expected to be presented to the legislature in the fall of 2026. Could we start with just a brief description of how a single-payer plan might work in Oregon?
I'll jump in with a brief description. So essentially, single payer just means there's one payer. One entity is paying for all the medical care that's occurring in the state, and that would be the Oregon government. And there's huge efficiencies to be gained with that system. When people ask why is healthcare so expensive, the fragmented, siloed, inefficient structure of our system is one of those reasons. So single payer would have huge cost savings. Now, in terms of the specifics of how it's going to work, we are still waiting for the plan. So the governance board is considering all different sorts of components about how the plan will be financed, what it will cover. The exciting news is that they are going to deliver an initial plan this June. So we'll have a first draft. And we do know that they're looking at a base coverage that matches the public employees package, which is hugely popular. Everyone's really happy with that. It'll cover vision, dental, mental health, and be financed through payroll taxes and potentially some other sources of revenue as well.
Are people going to have an opportunity to comment on that draft when it comes out in June?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's plenty of time to comment now, even before June. The governance board and the different subcommittees meet once a month, and public comment is really highly encouraged.
Okay, great. So by the fall of 2026, we're going to have this well-vetted single-payer plan, and it's going to go to the legislature. And what are the various possible scenarios at that point?
Yeah, so from what we can see, there are three possible paths forward once the legislature has this plan that they requested, right? So they wrote the bill to make the plan. So they'll have the plan back in their hands in September 2026. They could choose to implement it, from what I understand, as soon as 2027. They could just say, we wanted this plan, we got the plan, and now we want to do it. I've heard likely they'll want to bring this in front of Oregon voters so we can decide for ourselves. So in 2027 or 2028, the legislature could put this on the ballot. If they choose to do the third option, which is nothing really, then we, Healthcare for All Oregon, and other advocates around the state can gather signatures, get this on our ballot with a ballot initiative, and then vote on this probably by 2028.
Yeah, it seems to me, having observed these campaigns over the past couple of decades, that it's very likely it's going to end up in a public statewide vote. And given that, I'd like to devote the rest of our time to talking about the political challenges that you're going to face in trying to get a majority vote on a single-payer plan. By far, the biggest opponent that you're going to face is going to be the healthcare insurance industry, because for them, this is an existential issue. Depending on how it's written, it's either going to completely or substantially remove the insurance industry from the healthcare enterprise. And so they're going to pull out all stops. They're going to pour millions of dollars into a no campaign. They're going to have, you know, grandma and grandpa up there telling their horror stories. They're going to be lies and distortions. What is your plan to combat that?
Yeah, you raise a great point. There's no hope of kind of getting them on board here. So we know that the opposition is going to come out, and we know they're going to say a variety of things. Oh, watch out for your taxes, big government. You know, there are three big boogeymen that they use. Fortunately, we have good answers for those concerns. HCAO's communications are going to be critical in getting ahead of those messages and inoculating those fears. With the insurance companies, you know, they probably will exist. What's being talked about on the board right now is that private insurance will be able to offer supplementary plans. So they won't be able to compete with the basic plan itself. But as you know, that's going to be a big shift to their industry, and they're going to fight that. That's not going to be enough. You know, what we have to do is harness the feelings that Oregonians already have. I mean, we saw big headlines in November with the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. We saw how people feel about private health insurance companies. In this moment, I think the onus is really on private health insurance to try to justify their practices. And we have a lot of material with their denials, with the out of control profits for healthcare executives. We have a lot of material to make our case.
It's true that this is a moment where there's quite a bit of rage against the private insurance industry, and that does work to your advantage. So you would plan an informational campaign well ahead of time.
And also, you know, our strategy right now is a lot of like conversations. I know that sounds kind of squishy, but that is what reaches people. So we are at farmers markets, we're tabling at town at a community events. We have 14 chapters across the state. And so we are having those one-on-one conversations, answering questions, and at the same time trying to raise money to do kind of bigger ad campaigns also when the time comes.
So, a more gnarly question is, there are a lot of people, like for example myself, who are pretty happy with their health care insurance, and we have pretty generous benefits. And so for someone like me, am I going to get an equivalent coverage?
I think that's a concern probably everybody who is somewhat satisfied with their coverage would have in Oregon. My excitement with this plan is the cutting of these costs that can sort of balloon and spiral. So, no more co-pays, no more deductibles, no more networks that limit the providers that you can see in this proposed plan. Those kind of created limitations and created extra, ways that we as healthcare seekers and consumers are billed, those would no longer exist. And I think to something Rebecca mentioned about the level of coverage that is sort of the baseline that the governance board is working from to have the public employee benefits as the standard level of benefits and level of coverage offered to every resident of Oregon, I think sounds very fair and sounds good.
The other thing that's, you know, the concern about coverage is more, I think, a concern, yeah, about change and difference and not what to expect. What we have to remember here is the people who are in charge of designing this plan, these nine experts, their entire career has been built on improving health. You know, the health insurance companies are not on this board. The people who are responsible for denying care and trying to cut costs to enrich their executives, they have no say in this. So all the people who are trying to craft or are crafting this plan are people whose main goal is that you are healthy and that you are not going bankrupt. So that's hopefully something that will engender some trust.
I think another tricky problem that you face is that organized labor has not always been on board with single payer plans. They have bargained very hard to get good health benefits for their membership. And in many cases, they've even foregone wage increases in order to get better health care benefits. And what might happen in a single payer situation is that the employers are relieved of relatively high premiums that they have to pay for health care, and that they will realize substantial savings but they're not going to pass those savings on to their workers necessarily. And so the workers who have foregone wage increases to get these health benefits, then they don't get any payback. And not only do they not get payback from their employer, they're faced with a new tax because we're talking about income taxes, or I'm not sure what the plan exactly is anticipating in terms of where who's going to be taxed. So maybe you should start there and then talk about organized labor a little bit.
Sure. So right now, the governance board is looking at primarily a payroll tax. So employers will be making the major contribution towards that. You know, the finance and revenue committees have a huge job of trying to amass, what the financial picture is and how to make the pieces work together. So they are looking at an income tax as well. But yeah, so you bring up some really important points there. Interestingly, though, the unions are one of our biggest allies. If HCAO, we've built partnerships and a coalition across a lot of different organizations, but unions are one of our strongest groups that we can call on when we're trying to advocate around this. And much of that is because unions are really rooted in an ethos of solidarity. Their whole line of thinking is that it's not just what's in it for me, it's for the collective. But you're right, there is this inherent tension that they don't want to be at a loss in this situation. You know, what we're trying to put these pieces together is that, first of all this money that they are advocating for to go for their health benefits is again funding the most expensive, inefficient, wasteful system ever. So by shifting to single payer, there'll be huge cost savings. And yes, all the work that they have to do, they have to negotiate with their employers every single year to renew those benefits. They're not fixed in stone, and then they can go, work on other things. This is a battle that they have to do every year. If we're able to take that off the table, then they can go battle to get those savings translated into higher wages or other benefits. So there really is a win-win, but we need to have those conversations and keep unpacking those concerns because they are real concerns.
What unions are you making common cause with now? Who's in, which ones are involved?
Yeah, good question. I just got up our list of member and endorsing organizations from our website. So we've got AFM Local 99 from Portland, AFSCME from Corvallis. There's another AFSCME from Eugene, Oregon Nurses Association. Then Northwest Oregon Labor Council is also at sometime has been an endorsing organization. So the list does have an end, but it goes on and on. It's just a made up scenario that these labor unions have to fight for these healthcare benefits. It doesn't have to be this way. You know, we have humans created this very flawed system where that's a part of the conversation at every single contract negotiation, and we can choose to just remove that from the conversation and have quality, affordable health care for everybody.
What do you see as any other obstacles, in your way?
I think one perhaps is fighting the sense of hopelessness that is sort of permeating our state and our world right now, or just sort of seeing the ship hit the iceberg, in slow motion and being sort of unable to do anything about it. But I like to hit home that in Oregon, we are very fortunate that somehow, through frankly a lot of our organization's efforts and a lot of luck and a lot of other activists and organizers in Oregon, somehow we are probably going to be the first state to do it. I mean, it's just luck of the draw. You know, California, they're behind us. Washington's behind us. Oregon is the closest to achieving this end goal of a final plan. And so it feels pretty opportune to try to take advantage of it.
I was just going to say that I think one of the biggest obstacles is people not thinking that this is real, not thinking this is achievable. So we've been so kind of inured and beaten down into thinking that this is an abstract pie in the sky thing. When actually, health policymakers are all looking at Oregon right now. All various assessments have shown that a lot of policymakers think Oregon is poised to have the best chance of being the first state to do that. A lot of people have assumed that universal health care is something that has to happen on a federal level. So that's why we've all given up hope because the federal level, it's not happening there for anytime soon. But actually, again, health policymakers have long said that a state-based strategy is far more likely in the United States. That's how Canada achieved universal health care nationally. It started in one province. They proved the concept. Then other provinces said, we want to save that money too and have better health outcomes. So the dominoes fell. Yeah, I say to Oregonians, like, wow, we are living in the state that has the best chance of making this happen. And the number one thing that's going to determine that is if Oregonians get involved, learn how close we are, and help contribute to it. We have a role for everyone and anyone who wants to help make history here.
Are you concerned at all about the current federal administration and what they might do to sabotage this initiative since this is anathema to them?
Yeah, I mean, they are the current administration, is fiscally conservative, and this would save a bunch of money. It would make people healthy again. So, I feel like there's a lot of alignment in messaging. I think that this would be really great for Oregonians and really great for the administration to finally move to a system of healthcare that actually serves the common people and gets the people what they want. I mean, it's a states' rights issue, so we want to take care of the people within our borders.
That's a great job. I teach my students to try to think of the values of the opposition and speak in their language. So good job on that. To take a more pessimistic stance also, because we do need federal waivers. So for this plan to move forward, we'll need the federal government to give waivers to allow us to use Medicaid and Medicare funding for this program. But the timing really lines up well if there is a change, in the next presidential election. Like Colin mentioned, there's a slim chance that in 2027 the legislature will vote for it. But even then, that will just start the ball rolling. So it really wouldn't be until 2028 that I think that all these financial mechanisms would be shifting. We would have a better chance of doing this with a different party at a federal level. And that's what we are just moving forward on that. In the primaries and in before the 2016 election, Donald Trump said in the Republican primary debate he thought we should have Canada's healthcare system. He thought we should have universal healthcare. But yes, we are watching the federal level. We're a nonpartisan organization. These health issues affect every single Oregonian, regardless of party. It has been made a political issue by political parties, but again, we are just betting on people power, people's voice, and advocacy, and making our case. And we're not going to stop our work because of a possibility that the federal government will block it.
Before we close, can you tell our listeners where they might be able to find more information to see the draft plan when it comes out?
Sure. Yeah, I would say that the best place to kind of get a center of information is our website. So Healthcare for All Oregon, HCAO.org, and we'll have links to kind of easier links to find what's happening at the, what's happening with the state of Oregon.
Perfect. Great. Anything you want to add before we close?
I would just add, yeah, that message that this is something to watch and pay attention to, but even more than that, it's something to get involved in. We have opportunities to volunteer across the whole state, or even from the comfort of your living room in your pajamas. So this is people powered, and we're going to need Oregonians to get involved. So yeah, check out our website. Colin has done an amazing job on our social medias too. So we're on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. So find us and get in touch.
Colin Stackhouse and Rebecca Shoon, thank you very much for coming on our show today to tell us about something that's actually positive that's happening. So very much appreciate hearing about this, and as the time passes, we'll have you on again to talk about it more.
We'd love to. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you.